Welcome back to Small But Mighty, the Radlett Prep podcast, where we explore the ideas shaping prep education today. I'm Laura, and I'm joined by our Vice Principal, Sophie.
Hello, everyone. Today, we're diving into something that sits at the heart of everything we do at Radlett, wellbeing. What it looks like for prep-age pupils, and how a modern school can embed it into every corner of school life.
For us, wellbeing isn't simply an add-on. It's that feeling of being known, supported, and encouraged. It's children feeling emotionally safe, but also stretched, challenged, and celebrated. And it's giving them the tools to navigate the ups and downs of childhood, which, as every parent knows, can be quite a ride.
For our younger pupils, wellbeing is incredibly practical. It's in the predictability of the day and the emotional grounding that they get from familiar adults. One of the most powerful things we can do is to simply be visible and present. Every morning, members of staff are out on duty at the gates, greeting our children as they come in. Those first interactions, good morning, how are you today, give us a read on how each child is arriving emotionally and socially.
Absolutely. And it's that sense of being seen that continues throughout the day. Our younger pupils will often start the day with sensory circuits, for example. These are simple activities that help them to regulate and get ready for learning. It's amazing how transformative those 10 minutes or so can be. And it means that even if a child comes in full of energy or a little bit sleepy or maybe slightly wobbly, they get a structured moment to settle.
100%. And then there's the emotional language that we build with them. Through the Zones of Regulation curriculum, children learn to identify how they're feeling and what tools they can use to move themselves back to a calmer, more grounded place if needed. It's incredible to hear a five-year-old say, I think I'm in the yellow zone, yeah. I might need a bit of a break.
And of course, through our celebrations, celebrating those positive moments like certificates through relational rewards. So children who earn a certificate in our Friday assembly, for example, are invited to tea with SLT, which they absolutely love. A joyful relational reward which reinforces that well-being is about connection, belonging and effort as much as anything else.
Prevention is such a huge part of well-being. When the culture is warm, structured and joyful, so many potential issues never even start. For our younger pupils, Forest School is an absolutely brilliant example of this. Being outside, exploring, climbing, creating, it gives them that space to regulate and express themselves in a completely different way.
Lunchtimes here, our Opal Play programme transforms our playground into a world of possibilities. Pupils can build, dig, dress up, climb, invent games. You see every type of child find their place. A child who may sometimes struggle in the classroom often shines outside, and that sense of competence feeds back into the rest of their day.
One of my absolute favourite preventative measures that we have here at Radlett is our buddy system between year six and reception. It really creates this lovely cross-school family feeling that is so important to us here. The older pupils take such pride in supporting their little buddies, and the reception children walk a little taller knowing that someone big has got their back.
Yeah. And then embedded into every week for all of our year groups, we have mindfulness lessons, timetables and protected time, which just gives children that time to pause, breathe, notice and reset, which is such a powerful habit to build for life.
But wellbeing needs to be taught explicitly too.
Yeah.
Our Jigsaw PSHCE scheme of work gives us a structured, thoughtful curriculum, and every session begins with a mindful moment. And if you're in those lessons, you can really feel the whole class settle. Mm-hmm. It gives children that time to arrive emotionally before they actually learn.
There's those big themes celebrated throughout the year as well, which we shine a spotlight on. For example, Children's Mental Health Week and Neurodiversity Week. These sessions allow us to really explore important ideas in age-appropriate and engaging ways. They help our children to understand themselves and also others more deeply.
And actually, the Zones of Regulation curriculum we mentioned earlier is woven into everyday teaching too. Teachers now reference it naturally. What zone are you in? What tool could help you right now? It's become a part of our daily language, which helps children to regulate in the moment.
And of course, we have our bespoke values curriculum that we teach here. So teaching the values of compassion, resilience and respect with one focused on each term, which underpins everything. We teach those values deliberately. not as just a poster on a wall, but through stories, assemblies, discussions, and giving the children real life scenarios. When a child chooses kindness or shows determination, we then make time to name it and celebrate it.
As everyone knows, relationships form the backbone of wellbeing. And our small class sizes, around 16 on average across the school, make such a difference with that. Teachers know every child really, really well. Their personality, their humour, their triggers and their strengths.
And we have our dedicated head of pastoral care and a children's mental health lead. And because of this, we are able to respond quickly and thoughtfully. If a child is having a tricky time, we can offer pastoral check-ins, or either in small groups or in a one-to-one, to give them the space to talk and to reset.
And don't forget, we've also got our trained drawing and talking practitioners who support children through playful therapeutic techniques. It's gentle, it's child-led, and it can be incredibly effective for those who need a little extra emotional space.
And then on top of that, every fortnight, we hold monitoring meetings where staff review pupils with emerging or ongoing wellbeing needs. It means that nothing here at Radlett Prep is left to chance. We stay proactive, coordinated and responsive to children's needs. We are joined today by Dr. Cathy Weston, founder of Tooled Up Education and an expert in evidence-based approaches to parenting and family life. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Cathy, your work is rooted in research. What does the evidence tell us about the most effective ways to support wellbeing in primary age children in particular?
So I think it's important. I think when people think about wellbeing, they think about, you know, initiatives and programs. But what I would like to say is that well-being starts with relationships. And that's why, if you've noticed your child, you know, loves coming into school, loves speaking to their, loves their particular class teacher, all of that is an investment in that child's well-being. And that's why it's very important as parents that we need to support teachers first and foremost, because that's a very important attachment that that teacher enjoys with that child. And so much of well-being is rooted in relationship. So that sort of ecosystem of relationships around the school, but also school culture, can contribute to children's well-being. And that's that lovely sense of belonging, feeling like we are someone that matters in the school environment, that we're heard and valued and seen. So it's about culture, it's about climate, it's about relationships. And as you can hear, it's everyone's job to invest in children's well-being. It's certainly not just up to one or two members of staff.
I love that, what you say about relationships and, you know, it being everyone's job and, you know, all of us working together. That really resonates for us.
Pulling it back then to thinking more about the parents and what parents can do to support children's well-being, there's a phrase that I think we've heard quite a lot recently, mum guilt, dad guilt. What would you say to those parents who feel overwhelmed or guilty about trying to get it right all the time?
Well, there's a very wonderful book by the clinical psychologist Tara Porter who talks about good enough parenting. And she says good enough parenting is messy. You make mistakes. We've all made mistakes, myself included, and we own up to them and we acknowledge them. And even the fact those parents have said they feel guilty shows they're loving parents who understand the needs of their children.
They're also busy.
Yeah, they care. They're busy. I work about 15 hours a day. I don't feel guilty about it when in those moments when I see my child. Maybe it might be 20 minutes a day for me. I make the 20 minutes count. I make them laugh, I make them smile, I feel connected to them, and I promise I'll spend more time with them on Saturday. I've got teenagers, but the same point stands, that it's about quality time together. So I never feel guilty because I'm building a business, I'm purposeful. Well-being, my well-being and their well-being is also about purpose. So modelling to our children that we care deeply about what we do in our with our lives is good. So I think that parents need to ditch the guilt. It's a complete waste of time. And think about when they do have time with their children, how are they going to spend it and spend it well? And that doesn't mean spending money. Children want our time, our attention, our praise, our joy. They want us to laugh together. They want to muck around together. They want to play with their parents more than anything else.
So if you had then to choose one change that families could make this week that would have the biggest impact, would it be therefore related to making sure that the time you do spend with your children is of the highest possible quality?
Yeah, and what that means is we're not perfectionistic about it. Yeah. If I had to design 30 minutes with a child of the age at Radlett Prep this weekend, I would say to my 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old, listen, I've got 2 hours on Saturday and I want to be with you. What should we do together? What would you like to do with mommy or daddy? And let the child lead the play. Now, you will quickly discover they don't want too much. They want you to sit in their bedroom floor. They want you to play their dollies. They want you to, you know, do something with them, that's watch something with them that's meaningful to them. And actually, one of the greatest sort of interesting counterintuitive aspects of that is that even research, interfering too much is good. So just letting them lead. Let them lead the conversation. Even if you're building a Lego castle, don't be prescriptive. Don't tell them what to do. Just being with them, listening to them, listening to their ideas, offering a little bit of support when they struggle, but just pottering around together, mucking around, not having a huge schedule of things to do, just being together. You might go for a walk and you might spend ages, especially if you've got younger, very young children. They spend ages looking at things, exploring the world. They might pick up a stick and, you know, talk about it for 30 minutes. There is no better way to spend your time. And as part of that, the second component is laughing. If children are laughing, they're good, they're feeling good, they're feeling well, you're feeling well, you're feeling connected to them. It is cheap. You can engineer it as often as you like. And I promise you, there are volumes written on the neurobiology of laughter and the impact that laughter can have on connectedness, even in school, you know, in your school staff room. You'll know when we laugh together, we feel good, we feel cohesive, we have a sense of collegiality. It's the same at home, right? We want to make sure our children have access to joy. And laughing provides perspective. So it's very strongly linked to resilience as well.
Do you know, we're both sitting here, not just as leaders in a school, but also as parents, and you're making me feel reassured, but also very inspired by, you know, those simple things that we can do to help our children, both as, you know, in family time, but also in school, to really help them to feel connected. And, you know, we talk so much here about those relationships and, you know, children belonging and, you know, being part of this community and that family ethos that we have here in school. And it's so reassuring to hear you echo that and that is really echoed and supported by the research as well. So, yeah, they're very inspired and reassured and looking forward to the weekend, actually, with my children. We're going in the garden. but, you know, just talking a little bit more about those relationships and particularly sort of the relationship between, you know, school and home working together. You've talked about, you know, teaching children the skill of emotional literacy, giving them the language to be able to express themselves. What are the most effective ways do you think that we as adults, both adults in school and at home, can work together to really help children to regulate those big emotions that can sometimes be very overwhelming?
So I think all adults need to regulate their own emotion, right? So I was speaking to parents recently about homework time and parents getting very stressed and very anxious and sometimes shouting at their children. Like, we don't want that, right? We need adults to be calm, adults to be in control of themselves before they enter. So taking a deep breath before we go into the classroom, before we start teaching, a deep breath, you know, before we start homework with our children or something. It's our duty to do that. And so regulating emotions is important. Secondly, what are we modelling? So again, we've all done it. We may have lost our temper, become irritated, you know, thrown our hands up in the air because something's wrong with a photocopier. You know, whatever we're doing, we're modelling an emotional response. We can't get the key in the door at night and we're really angry. We're in a traffic jam and we lose it. What are they learning? So they are picking up temperament, emotional responses to stress. We are modelling coping all the time. And that might feel like a big, heavy responsibility, but it's okay. Because even if we lose our tempers or say something we should say to our children, I'm really sorry, I lost my temper and that's not right. And I need to learn to control my temper. Or when I'm feeling stressed again, I'm going to go walk around the block. And you can remind mummy or daddy to do that. So we can own up to not being perfect because none of us are perfect. But we can say sorry to our children as well. That's a very important component of what we're talking about, that kind of humility that lives within parenting and teaching, you know, that we don't always get things right and that's okay.
I think that's so, so important for, as teachers, for children to see that their teachers also make mistakes, that they are human. I think it's almost more important for teachers because I think, you know, pupils at school do put their teachers and the adults that teach them on a pedestal. So actually to see them in those moments admitting to a mistake or I should have done it this way, I'm sorry, is a really, really important thing for the adults that work with children, whether it's in schools or at home or in another setting, to realise. Can I take us off on a bit of a different tangent now and talk a little bit about digital life, which is quite a huge factor for children, for families at the moment in particular. Do you have any guidance on what kind of realistic boundaries or habits that you would recommend that parents and teachers kind of set for primary age pupils?
Yeah, so number one, if I had a child at prep school age, they would not be able to just go on any device at home without consulting me, without even signing it out. I used to get my boys to sign out the iPad. What are you taking it for? What are you looking up? When are you bringing it back? So there has to be very, very strong monitoring, positive engagement and upskilling of children at this age. They should not have unfettered access to digital devices for very, very good reasons that you can read about in Tilda. So that's the first thing. None of them should be using social media.
Yep.
I've lots of reasons why that's the case as well. And very stark statistics about this particular age range of 7 to 10 being particularly targeted by perpetrators online. So there are very, very good reasons to be discerning, to monitor. I'm still collaborating with my 16-year-old. He has a phone, but it's not his phone. It's a family phone. And I expect him to behave on it. I expect him to show respect on it. I have digital values that we're still teaching consistently. So every single family in your school should have their own family digital values. What are they? The second thing is we have to be consistent. You can't just give the iPad for 20 minutes, the next day you're not giving them the iPad. They don't understand if the rules are not consistent, and the rules need to be contextual. So what are the rules about digital devices at the dinner table? What are the rules about having the iPad in the car on long journeys? When are we allowed it? Children need rules, as you know, they need boundaries. And there need to be consequences when they breach that. So if they are off Googling things that they're not allowed to Google, or if they're downloading apps and games where they haven't asked permission, there has to be a consequence to that. And every family has to make up their own mind about what that is. The third thing is none of them should ever have digital devices in the bedroom at night. None of them, not even if they're 16, 5, 10, 11, 12, doesn't matter. It is a complete disaster for sleep deprivation and for digital hygiene. And my last point, which might seem a bit contradictory to what I've just said, is children need to feel empowered. They are not at the mercy of the digital world. We can raise all of them to be good digital detectives, to be discerning, to spot things that aren't right, which is part of digital resilience. And we at home can educate them. You know, I might get a spam phone call, a spam email, and bring my 10-year-old in and say, this email looks weird. And they'll say, Mommy, Amazon doesn't have two N's. It's a spam email. And there's a wonderful site called it's about deep fakes. It's by Northwestern Kellogg University. And I've done that with my own children. I've gone onto that site and we've looked at AI, and we're trying to work out, is a photo real or not? So within family life, we can start educating, we can collaborate. We're not just waiting for Internet Safety Week. This is a consistent dialogue where it's not just up to the school. It is an absolute, we do all of the heavy lifting within the home. And certainly within Tooled Up that your parents have access to, we are all over this topic. It is really important. It is a fast-changing world, fast-changing digital landscape, but parents need to stay up to speed on these kind of digital skills, focused on digital resilience and digital discernment.
And I think what you say there about it being such a fast-changing landscape is so important, because for us, it changes all the time. It is changing, and I think that is something that certainly in conversations that we've had with parents, it is quite overwhelming, and it's actually quite frightening for parents as well, because we don't know what we don't know, and our children are so much more literate in the digital world than we are. So I want to just taking that a little bit further, are there any perhaps We all hope that, families are able to, set these digital, have these family value, digital values and consistent rules and things in place. But maybe, are there any particular signs or signals that parents can be on the lookout for that might suggest that a child is struggling online, for example?
So the first thing to point out is we know certain children who might be psychologically vulnerable offline can be very vulnerable online.
Yeah.
So if your child is already feeling a little bit low about themselves, sad, struggling with any aspect of themselves, obviously it's not a good space to be in on social media, digging around for online communities, etc. So I think that I've totally forgotten the question. Sorry, ladies.
Just what are there any particular signals that parents can be on the lookout for?
Yes, yeah, so some of the things that little bit red flag behaviour might be excessive secrecy. So I would not expect any child of this age to be secretive about online behaviour. And that means with phones or devices or not wanting to show you anything. Also spending, you know, being intensely involved in a digital device or even a game to sort of an obsessional level. That's not particularly healthy. And, you know, everybody can understand why that's the case. And also if you've noticed they don't feel very good about themselves after they've been on a particular app or game, that requires careful exploration.
Brilliant, thank you.
So kind of trying to draw everything to a bit of a close now. If every child at Radlett Prep could carry one wellbeing message through life, what would you want that to be?
When I think of well-being, I think of purpose. And if all of us can make every single child in that school feel special, feel individual, feel, you know, proud of who they are and what they're about, that is the gateway to well-being. So that means I would ask children to think really heavily about their strengths and all the things their friends say about them that are positive and joyful. And being proud of that. So resilience, in addition to well-being, starts with self-knowledge and understanding, and also within that, appreciating difference. And so it's about celebrating who your child is, making children proud of who they are, proud of how different they are from one another. I think that's a wonderful foundation for a dialogue about well-being.
Cathy Weston, thank you so much. Your insight, your experience, your knowledge has been really enlightening and really, really invaluable. So I want to thank you very, very much for coming to speak to us today.
Thank you.
So much of well-being is built on those everyday things: routine, warmth, kindness, and being known.
And at Radlett Prep, those ordinary things become extraordinary because of the consistency and the relationships behind them. Thank you so much for listening to Small But Mighty. If you found this episode helpful, please follow and share the podcast.
Next time, we'll be exploring values for life, embedding character, spirit, and resilience. See you then.